LA Readers. Welcome back to the LA Reads podcast. We're your hosts, Abby
and Layton, and today is episode 9, maybe.
Well, yes, it is 9.
Shut the front door. Wow. 9.
We probably don't have to keep saying what number it is, but we're going to keep going with it anyways.
Yeah.
This is episode 4 of our 6 weeks of SJM that honestly went by so fast.
I know. How many episodes do we have left?
We only have 2 left.
2?
Yes.
3.
Two. Because we're only doing, we have this one, and then we're only doing 2 more episodes of Crescent City, and then we're done.
Holy cow.
That might be the end of our 6 weeks of SJM, but it's not the end of talking about
SJM in general.
Yes, exactly. But before we jump into today's episode, Layton, what have you been reading this week?
Oh my gosh. I was just pulling up my app because I actually have no recollection.
You've been on a grind.
I have been on a grind, and I don't know if that's a good thing or if that means I'm just unwell and all I can do is read. However, I have read Twisted Ink by A.M. McCoy, Bought by Willow Winters, For the Love of Cain by Ames Mills, The Auction by Aggie Cole, and then Defy the Night and Defend the Dawn.
Oh, that's what you've been reading!
Yes! Except, but no spoilers, but I was so confused when I was reading these books because in my head, I told myself it was a full-blown fantasy novel.
Oh, yeah, no.
Every conflict that arose in this book so far in the first 2 books, I'm like, oh, this is where she's going to discover she has magic. Magic's going to break free. There is no magic in this book.
There's no magic.
So I've just been lying to myself and constantly slightly being disappointed because I'm like, I don't know what it was.
For those of you who have not a single clue what's going on, Defy the Night is a book series, a YA fantasy book series.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I think it's one of a super, super good book. And it's also like a very good book for people who are wanting to get into fantasy because it isn't high fantasy.
Yes.
It's very there's not magic, things like that. And it's kind of like a Robin Hood retelling. That's kind of where it starts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what. Yes. They're stealing medicine for the poor.
Except, okay, sorry. I didn't know ACOTAR was a Beauty and the Beast retelling.
So fair.
I just don't catch on to those things.
No, yeah. So it's one of my top recs for people that are wanting to get into fantasy. And I don't know. I love it. Also, the third book, is it the best book? No. But I uncontrollably sobbed in that book as well. That's one of my more viral videos on TikTok is reading the book. And I have a video of me sobbing.
Stop.
And it's one of my more viral videos on TikTok.
So far, I've actually loved it.
Okay, good.
What?
Have you been listening to it?
Yes. Okay. I listened to the first 2 on audio. I've been listening to them on Libby. So the third book is 6 weeks out, which is the worst. However, I also realized how desperate I am for romance in a book because I won't say their names, but there's kind of an initial love interest. And I'm like, yes, I ship them so hard. Another character comes in for 5 seconds. I'm like, forget about the other guy. I want this guy. And then at the end, there's another guy that's not really an option, but he's just there.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't care about the other two. Just go with this guy.
That book is an emotional roller coaster for sure.
Yeah. Highly recommend. I think it's very similar if you like maybe Powerless. Kind of written similarly. Same vibes. Both YA fantasy, but yes,
we should do an episode when we are tired of doing the SJM stuff of just our top book recs, and we'll talk about all of our books that we want to recommend because that'd be fun.
Yes, that would be so fun. I love talking about books that I love.
We love. Anyways, okay, sorry. Okay, the things that I read this week is I listened to Silver Flames in preparation for this episode, so I listened to that, which was nice. And then I am not finished with it yet, but I'm almost done. I picked up my first Brandon Sanderson book.
Oh, I saw that.
I've been reading Tress of the Emerald Sea, so that's a winner for sure. And then I don't remember what I had finished the last time we filmed. I can't remember, but I've read now the first 3 books of the Boys of Tommen series. I just barely finished. What's the first one? Redeeming Six? Saving Six?
Yes. I haven't finished it.
Really?
No. Is it so good?
It is good, except for, this isn't spoiling. The third, so the first book is about Joey, right?
Yeah.
I thought, when they're interconnected standalone, sometimes the next book of the interconnected standalone will be somewhat in the past of the book previous, but then it'll catch up timeline wise to what you read in the first. Sorry, let me, it's so confusing. Let me try that one more time. I'm gonna, like, give that one more try.
I don't follow.
I thought that Joey's book was gonna, like, go back in the past a little bit to, like, explain, like, how they came to be and then get caught up to the past of, like, where the, like, where, like, Keeping 13 ended. Yeah, I just barely started the next book, Redeeming 6, and we have yet to catch up in the timeline. So
shut the front freaking door.
Yeah.
Because I started Saving 6 and it's all, like, past.
Yeah, it's all past.
Prior to the events of Keeping 13.
Yeah, and it's still, the whole book is.
You stop that right now.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, I really liked it, but I was like just waiting. Maybe this, again, the expectations were that we were going to catch up and I was going to get some answers. No, all my questions have not yet been answered.
Holy cow. And Taming 7 just came out on April.
I keep seeing videos 16th. Of it on TikTok, and I'm like, skip. But I want to read it so bad.
They're so cute, Gibbsy and Claire. I love them. Oh, my goodness.
Anyways, I think that's all I read this week. So, yeah. With that, any other news?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Guys!
Oh, yeah!
Okay, sorry. You are not going to see this episode until Thursday, so literally almost a week from now. But today, we are filming. It's April 20th, and it's Leigh-Ann's birthday!
I'm turning 23.
We're so old, guys.
I know.
What are you doing for your birthday?
I'm making my husband take me to Barnes & Noble.
We love.
To buy as many books as I desire. And then I'm making him take me to sushi.
I love that for you. Well, I told her that I have a present for her, but she has to open it on camera. So if you are not on YouTube, I'm so sorry.
That's so frightening.
But I wanted her to open. So here's your present.
Wait, I'm scared.
Ready, set, go.
Shut the front freaking door! I'm so sorry. My mouth was so close to the mic. No! Are you freaking serious right now? Guys, it's the Throne of Glass special edition. The Barnes & Noble special edition, right?
Yeah, the Barnes & Noble. I was like walking around the bookstore the other day and I was like, what should I get? And I saw that on the shelf and I was like, that is it.
Oh no, I dropped it.
But then there's like two other random things. The bookstore I went to also had these like hilarious bookmarks. So I bought one for myself too because they were so funny.
She got me a Zayden bookmark.
Yeah, they're just funny, like little bookmarks of book boyfriends.
I cannot think of a better bookmark. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. And then a little candle.
And she got me a Resand candle.
It smells freaking good too. It smells like an amazing hot man.
A unique blend of strength, golden skin, tattooed arms, and being the most powerful High Lord. You're kidding. You're kidding.
It's a happy birthday. I love you.
Oh my gosh. You're so nice to me. This is so crazy. I've been telling Abby for so long because I have the old Throne of Glass covers.
Yeah.
That I've been wanting to get special editions forever.
Yes. Well, I was debating between getting... Well, I was originally going to get you because you don't have Assassin's Blade or
Frost and Starlight.
So I was going to get them for you. But then I saw that on the shelf and I was like, she better not freaking have this.
I don't, guys. I don't.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So happy birthday.
Yeah. Abby's too nice to me. Holy cow.
We're old now, guys.
I know. Your birthday's not for a while.
I know. Dang, I have it. A couple months.
But now I have something I have to live up to.
No.
An opening on the podcast.
Anyways, okay. We will finally get into this week's episode. Remember, this is your spoiler warning. We'll be talking all about ACOTAR. Do any of your theories cross over into Throne of Glass?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so if you have not read Throne of Glass, also you are warned now.
Yeah, I will make sure I say Throne of Glass spoiler ahead of that because I just have one theory that crosses over. But
okay, great. And I don't think I have any... And if anything ever crosses over with Crescent City, we will be saving that for next week. So
exactly.
We had to work really hard to contain ourselves. But this is your spoiler warning. All right. We will be covering A Court of Frost and Starlight today and A Court of Silver Flames. If you want to listen about the other books, you can go to last week's episode. But yeah, let's start with Frost and Starlight. Did you actually read the book?
I did.
I'm so proud of you.
I read it on like 2x speed, though. I was flying through this thing. Except my first question that just comes to mind is, why does this book exist? Why?
I think it's like the description of just like a Christmas episode. Like it's like literally like.
But so... please tell, name one show off the top of your head that has a good holiday episode.
None of them.
They're all not good. So I don't know why we needed to cross over it into okay, books.
This is how I've explained this book series, because if you guys don't follow me on TikTok, my viral video that kind of got me a following in the first place was a video of me describing the reading order of SJM.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommended that you read the first three books of ACOTAR, so A Court of Thorns and Roses through ACOWAR, and then you read Throne of Glass, and then you read these last two books. And I described A Court of Frost and Starlight to be more of just a transition book, because you have the first three ACOTAR books that are in Feyre's perspective, and it's about their war with Hybern and her story with Rhysand and all of that. And then I feel like A Court of Frost and Starlight literally has no point other than to literally just be a transition into what I would consider phase two of ACOTAR, which is Silver Flames and beyond. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In my head, it's emotional healing plus dropping all the seeds that she needs in preparation of Silver Flames.
No, truly. So I think it's more of just like a transition into being like, okay, now you read about Feyre and Rhysand, here's kind of a transition into what is going to be next kind of thing.
I think Sarah J. Maas probably really liked writing this book because it seems like a fun book.
Yes.
It's almost like she had to be super serious for all the other books and everything. Yes. Like that. And she's like, I just want to take a little writing break and write a fun, cute little smutty holiday romance.
Yes.
Except with that, this book, nobody's thriving. Everybody is sad and depressed and unwell. And I came into it thinking, oh, this is going to be a fun holiday episode. And it is a sad holiday episode.
Everyone is struggling.
Yeah.
So freaking true. Okay, well, I did gather some thoughts, though, from the book.
Yes.
Okay. Also, this is a realization I came to this past week, so I don't know what book it would really occur in. However, did you know that Azriel's mom is alive?
I did.
I did not know that. Why did I just assume that she was dead?
Honestly, you can assume that for most, like, fantasy books in general, that you're... MMC or your FMC or whoever, just assume their parents are dead.
Well,
you're probably right.
Stupid, because this entire time I thought that his mom was dead. But regardless, I had a thought, because there's a scene in Frost and Starlight where Rhysand and Feyre are talking in the kitchen, and Azriel like gets really defensive of Elaine and like goes and like helps her, and
yes.
Rhysand like mind speaking tells Feyre, he's like, oh, like sensitive subject, it's like because of how his mom was treated, because his mom was like a slave servant person.
Yeah.
Azriel's mom was. And I realized that, I said, I think the reason why Azriel is so drawn to Elaine is because I think Elaine reminds him of his mom.
I hate that. You know how people, it's said, like, in general, in real life, people are always saying, like, oh, you'll date somebody who resembles maybe your father, because that's just what...
Or your mom.
I hate that. I hate everything about that.
I just think it was so, like, he's very protective over Elaine. I think it's because Elaine reminds him of his mom.
I do remember that scene, because I think what triggers him is Elaine's getting everything ready, and Cassian starts to eat his food before Elaine sat down at the table.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, oh my gosh, that's so impolite.
Yes,
to
that
do
was
that.
Exactly what it was.
And Feyre was like, we have never done that before. Like, this is not out of character for Cassian. I don't know why Azriel's freaking out now.
Yeah, and Rhysand is like, it hits at random times. And you're like, okay.
Okay, but we'll touch base more on this later, but I'm firmly in the court now. I was undecided last episode. I am firmly in the court of Illusion. That is going to be endgame.
Oh, so true. Because also, the other thing, I just have Elaine gives me the ick. Because also, so true, I saw this video on TikTok today where this girl was like, my hot takes about ACOTAR, and they were like, if you are going to get mad at Nesta for not helping Feyre when they were poor and things like that, then you need to be getting mad at Elaine as well, because Elaine is equally in the wrong for like not helping Feyre and things like that. But everyone just like bypasses everything that Elaine does. She's like, oh, she's sweet, she didn't mean to. And you're like, no, she did. Anyways, I think that she's a brat. I think literally she gives me the ick.
Yeah, I think that was a really big point of conflict in Feyre's and Rhysand's relationship in Silver Flames, because Rhysand hates, like, vehemently hates Nesta. And he's impartial to Elaine, if not likes Elaine a little bit. And she puts her foot down and she's saying to Reese and being like, you're so hypocritical. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
For those exact
Which
reasons.
Which is so annoying because, and then also Elaine, so in Frost and Starlight, Lucien, poor guy, this poor guy.
He is rough in it in every book. He's
struggling. I feel so bad for this guy. He gets sent to go to the Spring Court to try and spend it with Tamlin. Gets kicked out of the Spring Court. Tamlin freaks out on him. So he ends up being basically stuck in Valaris with all of them. And so he gets Elaine a gift for
Solstice.
And they're enchanted gloves so that they don't get dirty. Like, they won't rip or, like, get ruined. And what does Elaine do? Thanks. Sets them aside. Feyre's inner monologue is like, I wonder if she likes having the dirt feel on her fingers and things like that. And I was like, this poor guy.
Oh my gosh.
That was literally the most thoughtful, cutest gift. And this woman literally just said, thanks. Puts it to the side. Oh my gosh, I cannot handle.
I think Elaine's more, I want to say smarter, but that's not quite the correct word. Maybe more intentional and things like that than we assume. Because I've seen people compare her or like the Archeron sisters to the Mean Girls. The girls from Mean Girls being like, Feyre is Katie or Catty or whatever her name is. Nesta's Regina and Elaine's just Karen. She's just existing in her own world.
Yeah.
However, I think she knows everybody coddles her. And I think she uses that to her like benefit.
Yeah.
It's not like she's wanting people to necessarily do it, but she says, oh, if somebody's going to coddle me, then I'm going to use it so I can avoid Lucien because I don't want to deal with it. And I know everybody else is going to do the work for me.
No, truly. And she gives me the ick. I'm like, woman, be a woman. Stop being so mean to this guy who is literally just trying so hard to give you give you space and be kind. Like, we have already established, like, for a mate to, like your mate, like, reaction, like, when you have mates is, like, very, like, they're very aggressive. They want to protect. They want to, like, consult, whatever. And Lucien is fighting against literally every single fiber of his being to, like, give her space. And I'm like, this poor guy.
I know.
In the band of exiles now.
I think the next ACOTAR book, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not officially confirmed, but it's very heavily suspected that it's going to be about something about Elaine, Azriel, Lucien type.
Yes.
Thing. Yeah. I think as soon as she gives Lucien a chance and stops being so hard-headed and stubborn about it, she's gonna realize they actually fit very well.
No, I agree. I wrote down in my notes too that because in Frost and Starlight too, she at dinner they're having this conversation and Elaine asks Amarin, like, oh, did you have a choice to, like, be a man? Like, and it's hinting that, like, Elaine was, like, asking, like, if she would ever have a choice of, like, being able to turn back human.
Yeah.
And Amarin's like, you're never gonna be human again, like, stop. And I wrote down in my notes, it's like, I feel like she will end up, like, she now hates being Fae, or at least she's like, she's not really accepting it of herself. Like, I don't feel like she really loves herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whatever guy shows her that how to love herself again and, like, love who she is, I think will be the one that she'll end up being with.
I wonder if her book will actually be fairly similar to Silver Flames in character arc wise, because Nesta was the same way. I mean, at the beginning of Silver Flames, we'll touch base more on Silver Flames later, but she's, like, drinking herself into a stupor. Like, she can't do anything, and it's primarily because she hates being Fae. And then by the end, we obviously see she's happy with it. So I wonder if Elaine just needs the same thing. Sarah J. Maas has a thing for, like, the way to get over emotional trauma is, like, physical training.
Yes.
So maybe we'll get that from Elaine. Probably not.
I don't see it. I don't know. I'm interested to see, too.
Doesn't seem like her personality type to be the warrior kind of.
But also, okay, sorry, this is such a side note track. We'll go back in a second. But I also had this thought this week. Was that we've obviously seen in past SJM books, especially in Crescent City and in Throne of Glass. This isn't a spoiler, by the way. It's just she writes in so many perspectives.
So many.
But it's because those books are in third person. When it was in first person, in Feyre's perspective, it was only in Feyre's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking back about it. In Throne of Glass, yes, it's in multiple people's perspective, but we only get, like, it starts out with just two or three. Like, it starts out really small, and then it builds to more and more perspectives as the series goes on. I'm starting to think, because we've always been so focused on, like, oh, the next book is going to be about, you know, Elaine and Asriel and, like, Lucien. Like, that's who it's going to be about. But I'm like, what if it's not just perspectives of them? It's still in the perspective of Nesta and Cassian and stuff. It's just going to be adding on perspectives as well.
That is a very interesting thought, because the more that I think about it, I think there's a good chance. I think it is going to be centered around Elaine, and I can explain why here in a second. And I think the other perspective is going to be Lucien.
Yeah,
and we're not going to get an Asriel perspective.
Really? You don't think?
Well, I was looking up a bunch of interviews with Esham to see if she had dropped any hints. And we had mentioned this before, where she had gone drinking with her editor and said, I explained everything I had planned for the next several books to my editor.
Yeah.
And where all the couples were going to be and where they were going to end up. And then the editor came back to her a few days later, and this was like after her drunkenly pitching it.
Yeah.
Was like, we want to buy all those books.
Oh, dang.
You're going to write them. We love it.
I did not know that part of the story. That's crazy.
Yeah. And she says when she's explaining it, she's like, yeah, I told her how I wanted, like when she was explaining the character, she's like, I told her where I wanted Nesta to end up, where I wanted Elaine. Mm-hmm. And then she says Mor and Asriel. And those are the four characters that she name drops. So I wonder if, like, we got Nesta with Silver Flames. I wonder if we're going to get Elaine and Lucien in the next book. Then the Mor, Aerys, Emery, whatever situation is happening
is going
there.
On.
And then
we'll get to that momentarily.
Like, the Asriel, Gwen type thing for...
Interesting.
Because that's the correct number of books that she said they purchased.
Interesting. It's just, ACOTAR is such an odd book series to me now, because in the beginning it's like Feyre's perspective and it's like high fantasy. Like, it has romance aspects, obviously, but it's like fantasy focused. But I feel like making every book like in a different perspective, if it's giving more romance, because that's how like interconnected standalones work, is it's like,
yeah,
they're all, the stories are all the same, but they, like, I don't know. I think it's a very interesting take. So maybe that's why she's doing it this way, because I've never really seen a fantasy book do that before, having like interconnected standalones with still like overarching same plotting. Yeah. I don't know. It's really interesting because the plots all still have to go together. Like, the fantasy side still has to be going somewhere.
But it's so curious, or I'm so curious about it, because like the first three ACOTAR books are all Feyre and Rhysand.
Yeah.
And then we randomly have this one spinoff of like Nesta and Cassian. And like you said, maybe their perspectives continue, but it feels like their story was pretty much wrapped at the end of Silver Flames.
I don't feel like it is, though.
Really? Why?
I can't say without spoiling things, but I don't feel like it is. It's not. It's definitely not.
Really?
First off, sorry, we are jumping around so much, but first off, I feel like the Valkyrie stuff isn't done yet.
I 100% agree with that. I agree.
Yes. Also, there are some things. This, I'm scared.
TBD. Another
TBD,
time.
Sorry. Sorry. There are some things that I think hint at their story not being done. Think really long and hard about it in the most recent SJM book that you have read.
Are you talking about the very end?
Yeah.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about, but I feel like that would be something in somebody else's book that's just mentioned on the side.
It's just like watching, like what their perspective of watching things
unfold.
Well,
similar to Silver Flames.
Fair.
Like how it's Nesta and Cassian's book, but there's also other plots going on on
and
the outside
like, and
of it.
It's just like, it's like like watching like Feyre and Rhysand have a baby and stuff like from her perspective. Okay, yeah.
Something like that.
Interesting, interesting. Sorry, we went on such a long tangent. Anyways. What other thoughts do you have about Frost and Starlight?
Oh, I just, this book for me is just so jail. I can't with this book, because first things first, one of the first things that like jumped out at me was Rhysand. There was premeditated sex in the sky. In the sky.
Those are my favorite TikToks. Have you seen them?
No.
Where people, there's a TikTok where someone's like, they're like, just a Valoris Valaris standby, you know, just the resident walking around one day, and it's just them looking up to the sky. It's like it's raining.
Yeah, you're like, ah! You did not just say that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The minute I saw that, first of all, first crime was like sex in the sky. I'm like, that's so unnecessary. I know we want to be creative and he's a Lyrian and he has wings. Jail. Second of all, then he comes out with it and he's like, I've been planning this for months. That's your fantasy? Doing it in the air? Are you for real right now?
Creative.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
Is this coming from the woman that reads dark romance that has the most questionable sex scenes ever?
Okay. Shh, we don't have to talk about that. But also, then jail number two is, he has this crisis because we see a lot of internal monologue in Frost and Starlight. Mm-hmm. As I had mentioned, it's a lot of emotional healing. Yeah. And he has this panic of like, oh my gosh. It's Feyre's 21 because we see her have her 21st birthday. He's like, I'm so old. Like, I just cradle robbed her. She's not going to experience anything. Like, what have you done at 21? Yeah. Starts freaking out. And then Cassian has the audacity to be like, oh, 21's pretty old, as opposed to, you know, your mom's 19 to your dad's 900. Anybody who says they hate age gap romance, I don't believe you, because people will be like, I hate age gap. And then they'll read this and I'm like, their age gap, if I do that math in my head really fast, is 800 and what? 89 years? Yeah. Wait, that would make her 11.
One more time.
879. It's a lot of years. It's over 800 years. For sure.
Gosh dang it. That is very true.
I was like, why are we having this crisis now? You've been at it for 3 books already.
Also, your mates at this point, high lady, like, there's no going back at this point.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh. But the way he phrased that, I'm like, that's unhinged. Because that's, I forget so bad that they're, you know, 500, mm-hmm, whatever. Because I'm not sure how old they're actually supposed to look. I know in Throne of Glass, if I can say this, maybe spoiler, there's like the settling and you just kind of stop at an age.
Yeah, and it's similar to like what Crescent City has, which is the drop.
Uh-huh.
But I have no idea.
So I'm like, is Reese 32? Is he?
I think in my head, they're like in their like 30s, like face wise and things like that. So
at least according to the fan art, like, you best be in your 30s because no 20-year-old is looking like that.
Yeah, no, that's so true. So maybe that's why I think that, is because that's what I see in the fan arts. But I don't know how old they're supposed to look.
Me either. Please report back, anybody who actually knows.
Someone please help us. We're struggling. Also, I had another thought. There's a line in Frost and Starlight where, and granted, I'm pretty sure it's during a sex scene between Rhysand and Feyre. I'm pretty sure.
Not shocking in the slightest.
Not shocking in the slightest. It's like what most of this book is. Anyways, but there's a part where Feyre, like, randomly, occasionally, will be like, I see the painting in my head, and then will say the title of, like, the painting she's thinking of.
Oh my gosh, I saw this too.
Well, there's a, in the title of one of the paintings that she, like, had, like, in her head was, like, something triumphant and stars eternal. And mm-hmm, stars eternal, for some reason, stuck out to me. I don't know why. I think it's maybe because, like, stars has kind of been, like, a relatively, like, consistent, like, imagery between them, like, you know, with the stars who listen quote. Then we also have like the 8-pointed star, things like that. And so I have this theory that whatever the last book ends up being in the ACOTAR series, where like everything's gonna wrap up, whether that's in a massive war, whether that's like whatever it's gonna be, and then whatever the last book is called, I think it's gonna be called a Court of Stars Eternal.
Interesting.
I don't know what it means exactly, but I just feel like stars have been a relatively like consistent imagery that I'm like, I feel like it,
and it's definitely very prominent in other SJM books.
Yes, exactly. And Stars Eternal just felt like the wording of it just felt so like right, like it worked so well for a title that I was like, intersecting.
I do get thrown just randomly that it's a court of silver flames and it's not like a court of silver and flames like the rest of the books. I'm like, oh, we just randomly dropped the and.
Yeah. Do you think that she's going to continue doing that or bring back the and?
I don't think it's really necessary, but it just doesn't roll off the tongue like Akatar, Akabor. It's like
Akasif. Akasif.
I don't like
the if.
Yeah. I'm like, anyways,
that was my last thought, though, of Frost and Starlight.
I had a couple more, but okay, they're really brief. One, so we know Cassian is a bastard, correct?
Yeah.
And then his mom kind of gave him up to the soldiers so he wouldn't be necessarily associated with her and have to live that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
But then he goes and he trains and he gets older and then he comes back for his mom and she's dead.
Yeah.
The village has killed her. Whatever. And then the village won't tell him where she's buried, which ding, ding, ding. No body, no crime. Is she dead? I didn't see her body. I feel like
really
in every fan, not necessarily fantasy book, but in every book, it's like if I didn't see the body, I don't believe for one second that person is actually dead.
Especially when it comes to SJM, because we know her and being able, her ability to kill off characters.
Yes. So I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be like a prevalent plot line that would come back up, because if it did, I would probably assume it would be in Silver Flames, because that's a Cassian-centric book.
Yeah.
However, the minute that he's like, oh, I don't know where she's buried, I'm like, how do you know she's dead?
Yeah.
By word of mouth?
I can't remember. I feel like there was something, but I can't remember. But yeah, he did. I'm pretty sure if I remember right, he like, because he explains it deeper in Silver Flames, and he's like, I went and they told me she was dead.
Yeah. So somebody let me know if there's more information that I'm missing. But
yeah, I might be missing something too. I can't remember off the top of my head though.
Yeah, I didn't believe that for one freaking
second.
Interesting.
Okay.
And then the other thing that I feel like Frost and Starlight and Silver Flames together, but initiated in Frost and Starlight, was my interest in like the Illyrian training in Illyrian camps and everything like that. Obviously in Silver Flames we see the Valkyrie and everything like that. I hope there's another book that dives deep either in the past of Rhys, Az, and Cass, like when they're in the Illyrian camps as boys.
I've always said this, and I made a video about it too, where I would die. I would pay so much money for her to even just do a novella. I don't care of a compilation of stories of the Bat Boys when they were training. I've wanted it so for so long, because they talk about so many stories and things that I'm like, give me the first snowball fight, give me their training, give me Rhys's mom. Like, I want to see all of it so bad. I would do anything for a novella.
I know. And in Silver Flames too, Cassian literally name drops and says, oh, I fought side by side with the original Valkyrie, and they're like, you what now, how old are you?
Yeah, he's exactly
like, yeah, I fought with them. And I'm like, what do you mean? So I'm like, I would love to get the inside scoop with that, because obviously with the Valkyrie, I'm assuming the dynamics of women fighting in the Illyrian camps was a little bit better. Because obviously now we see with Emery and everything like that, women are not welcome in the Illyrian camps, and them trying to reignite this Valkyrie. I would also love to see the Valkyrie try to integrate into the Illyrian camps and the dynamics of actually having women side by side.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm obsessed with a good training arc. I think
I
that's
like
my
the training
thing.
Arcs.
And so that whole like side story just interests me so much. And I even saw somebody have a theory, and we'll touch base more on this in a second, but they think Mor is going to end up with Emery.
Yeah.
And then that Mor's going to join the Valkyrie.
That'd be amazing.
With that, which would be a great time to delve into that if Mor's gonna get her own book or even her own novella with what's happening there.
Interesting.
So I don't know, but I sure hope it's on the horizon.
I hope it's on the horizon. We'll touch more on the Valkyrie, because I have so many things to say about it. But yeah, that's a good thought point. I think it'd be really interesting to get more stories, but she could write story after story about these characters, and I would just eat up every single thing about it.
I know. And she she has stories just brewing in her head.
She's probably written them too. It's actually a writing technique that I learned about, like when you do like your characters' backstories and stuff, it's really helpful to like write out actual stories. Like I've talked about this in the book that I've been writing, like one of my characters' moms died in the past, and I wrote out the story, like what the chapter would have looked like if it was like actually in a book. And I wonder if she has anything like that or like scrapped I'm sure she has scrapped chapters for sure, but like if she's ever like written out actual stories and things like that of like just so that she had it like in her head, like backstory wise. And I want her to release every single one of them.
I know she probably could just unedited and just be like, here, have them. And people would be like, I love
Feral.
This.
Yes. Anyways, any other thoughts?
No, I think everything else crosses over into Silver Flames.
Yeah.
So
cool. Love. Okay. Silver Flames. So many things. Okay. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
So obviously Silver Flames is the healing journey, I would say, of Nesta mostly. Like it's a Nesta and Cassian book and it's about their relationship and things like that, but it's mostly focused on Nesta and her journey after that war. And so we obviously see from the beginning that she's like drinking herself basically dead and having sex all the time and unwell at this point.
Yeah, lots of boys, lots of booze.
Yes. And someone had pointed this out on TikTok where they were like, it seems weird because she goes through this like healing arc and by the end of Aqua War is like in a good spot, like she's like she has a role and things like that, and then it felt like at the end of Aqua War, like, and like from Frost and Starlight and stuff, it was like Nesta had taken so many steps forward and then it all just like slid back. But do you feel like Nesta's response and like what she did after the war was like valid, or did you like understand Nesta's feelings? So I feel like the reason why people hate this book sometimes, because I feel like this is a very controversial book, a lot people either love it or hate it. I feel like people that hate it are usually the people who are like, I think that Nesta's being ridiculous, like things like that. Do you feel like you understood Nesta's character?
Yes and no, because sometimes it bothers me when I see main characters, you know, have something super traumatic happen to them or have a significant other die or somebody close, and then their response is like, I must go on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait. You can be sad. Like, be sad for a minute, wallow for a minute, because I feel like if I were in their shoes, I would be like a hot mess for a while. So when I see them be like, oh, you know, they would want me to go on, I'm going to push on and then pretend like none of it happened.
Yeah.
It makes me mad.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
So I do think her response was valid. The length of her response, I don't think so, as well as the way she's treating others, the boys and the booze. I'm like, okay, she's having a hard time, whatever, I get
that. She's trying to contain her powers.
But her being such a wench to everybody, I'm like, that is so not necessary. And yes, we find out she's kind of doesn't like herself and feels like she's not worthy
of
the people she's around, and so she's pushing them away, whatever.
Yes, yeah.
Don't be a witch. I hate it. That part, she would, the first, I would say half of this book. It's 800 pages. The first 400 pages, I could not stand her. I was like, oh my gosh, girl. When she's sitting down in training, I'm like, this just feels like a waste of time. If you're there.
Yes. You're like, you're throwing chissy fits. You are an adult. And also, I do agree too. It's like, it's not as, because she's always been like this. Like, she's always been kind of a viper. Like, Feyre says it all the time. But it's almost, it was always better, I feel like, because we were seeing it from Feyre's perspective, so we weren't hearing Nesta's inner dialogue of, like, what she was actually thinking in her moments of, like, defiance and things like that. And then, but in Silver Flames, we start to get the inner monologue of her being, like, I really should get up. Continues to sit down, and you're like, wow. The miscommunication and your inability to actually explain how you're feeling is extremely frustrating.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying she needs to change everything about herself, because I love a good, feisty, headstrong character.
Yes.
And like you said, she's known for being sassy. She's known for being devil's advocate, not going with the flow, whatever. But it got to the point where it was frustrating as a reader to even have to deal with that. I'm like, no, be headstrong, be sassy, be whatever, but also be a little bit reasonable
and explain your feelings sometimes too, which I think is like, because by the end I still don't really feel like we got to a point where Nesta was like openly talking about her feelings by any means. She had her outbursts and things like that, but never like actually fully opening up to Cassian especially too. I don't know, I think I've always said that I love her healing journey, and I think that this book is very, very good, but sometimes Nesta pisses me off.
Yeah, and the only emotional healing I feel like that other people saw outside of herself is she kind of has her connection with Reese after the whole ending. They're both kneeling in front of each other.
Yeah.
Which we know Reese doesn't kneel for anybody.
Yes, exactly.
So he's kneeling. They're sobbing. That was fulfilling because he hated her so much.
Yeah.
She, on Starfall, I think, is that when she apologizes to Amarin?
Yeah.
And they kind of come to a resolution. And then during dance lessons with Moore.
Yeah.
It's the first time that she lets Nesta call her Moore and not Morgan.
And Moore, like, kind of softens so just a titch.
There's baby steps that we're definitely seeing. But I think you're right. It wasn't a clear cut, like, I'm so sorry for everything I did in the past. I'm ready to move on. It was more like these small, like, okay.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm moving on. Let's forget about it.
Yeah. Anyways, I just was curious because I feel like this book is, like, definitely, like, a love-hate. And either people love it and they love Nesta, or they're like, I hate Nesta and I hate this book.
Well, I feel so torn about this book. In our rankings, I put it as second.
Yeah.
Just, I put A Court of Wings and Ruin as my number one and then this one as second.
Yeah.
And truly, it's because of the last fourth of the book. Because there's kind of four different sections to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, love, love the Valkyrie. I love the training arc. I love Emery and Gwen. I love the blood rite.
Yes.
Some of my favorite SJM writing of all time.
Yes.
Just everything leading up to that. Hard.
It's long. I will be honest. I love books. I love romantasy books, but I love romantasy books that are fantasy with romance subplotting. Mm-hmm. Whereas I felt like with Silver Flames for the first, like you said, like three-fourths or two-fourths of the book, like half of the book, is like, it's like semi-fantasy, this like small training arc, but mostly romance focused. And I'm like, no, like, give me the Valkyrie, give me all of this training. Like, I don't know. I do think that it was like very like lopsided when it came to like the romance fantasy aspect of it a little bit. But when I was re-listening to it, this is my third time now, like, reading / listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I love the Valkyrie so much. Like, I am just so excited to see where she is going with that. And I am so excited to see Nesta step into a role of kind of leading the Valkyrie as well. Which is why I feel like Nesta's story isn't over yet. Because I think that if anyone is... She even tells Cassian in this book, she's like, she's like, what if, like, I led, like, a group of women? Like, if I, like, led them? Like, it hints at, like, her having that, like, train of thought. And I'm like...
Yeah, because she's reading the battle strategy books. Yes. And he comes in and he's like, oh, planning any wars or, like, something. And she's like, maybe leading a group of women. I don't know. And then he gives her all the extra books.
Yes. I just love the Valkyrie so much. Like, it obviously starts with Gwyn and Emery and Nesta and things like that. But, like, truly, like, the other priestesses and stuff, like, I kind of forgot that, like, the other priestesses, like, had cut the ribbon. Like, they were all, like...
There was, like, a lot, too.
Yes, there's a lot by the end. And also, this isn't just, like, because for some reason in my head, I was like, oh, all the priestesses are training, but they're, like, bad. Like, they're not, like... They're mm-hmm. not, like, really, like, warriors something. But then I, like, when I was re-listening to it, I was like, oh, but they, like, they cut the ribbon. Like, they obviously are, like, hardcore training. Like, they are very capable warriors, all of them. And I was like...
Yeah, I don't know if they specify if the other priestesses finished the Blood Rite trial. But I think specifically Nesta, Emery, and Gwen get singled out because he has Devlin and those other Illyrian... Yeah. What do you call that? Illyrian people in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Come watch those three specifically complete it. And so I think they're singled out.
Yes. But up until then, like they said, like all the other priestesses were training on the mm-hmm. thing. Because Nesta says in those chapters, she's like, oh my gosh, sorry, Soda. she says that she's like, me, Emery and Gwyn were like got the furthest. So, like, it was hinting that the other priestesses were also doing it, but it did clearly state that a lot of, like, it name drops a couple of the other priestesses that cut the ribbon at least.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I don't know. I just love the Valkyrie and I'm so excited to see where she's going with this.
I love to see bad A women thrive. That's just my cup of tea. So I think with Throne of Glass, we obviously see something similar and things like that. However, for that specific reason, I cannot stand the ending of this book. I think it's fulfilling. However, just it's like a small itch that I just wish was scratched with the ending.
Which part of it?
because obviously at the end we see them climbing up the breaking during the blood, right? And Emery and Gwen go and they make it to the top and they're named whatever that name is. That means they finished.
I can't remember, but yeah.
But, you know, Reese, Az, Cass, and 8 other people have done it or something like that. And Nesta doesn't get that title. And I'm like, that just makes me so upset because I wanted to see her beat the whole thing.
So no, that's so true.
Then she could like shove it at all the other Illyrians and be like, oh, I'm one of the 15 who finished.
No. There's only
12, I think.
No, 12 had made it to where Nesta stops.
Oh.
Like, only 12 people had ever actually made it to like the mountain. And then they're like, oh, should we climb it? And they're all like, no, maybe we'll just wait. Like, this is, like, already pretty great. And then they all share their sob stories. Yes. And then they're like, okay, we're going to climb it. And they climb it. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be wrong with this. I'm pretty sure the only people that have actually finished are Rhysand, Azriel, and Cassian.
Which makes me so mad, because now it's Rhys, Az, Cass, Emery, Gwen, and not Nesta. Oh, my gosh. I'm like, ugh.
I do think it's very funny, and I do wish that she would have finished as well, but also I just felt like, but again, also the fact that like not very many people have finished it and they did, I think that in my head, I just was thinking that they weren't as good of warriors as they actually were, and so I was like, why did they finish? Like, it just felt so cheesy. I don't know.
Yeah, I see the point of like why they did that, and Nesta doing like the last stand similar to...
What's his face?
It's the mountains, Romulus. Whatever his name is. Whatever the guy's name is. Yeah. So it was very poetic. And like, obviously, the plot with Cassian and everything had to come to fruition.
Yeah.
So I see the point. However, just this little itch in the side of my head was like, no. It would
have been nice to see them all up there.
Yes, 100%.
No, so true. But I think that her stance against the Illyrians, which I don't think, this is why I don't think that the Valkyrie and Illyrians will ever blend, is because I feel like Nesta's like whole role as like she moves to the future and stuff is going to be building basically her own army of women Valkyrie, and she's going to be shoving it in the Illyrians' face, be like, fine, if you won't train these girls that we've been trying to get you to train for 3 books, I will do it myself.
I freaking hope so. I hope she shoves it this in her face.
And this is kind of why I hope that Nesta's perspective stays, because I want to see her training other people, and I want to see the Valkyries continue to grow. Like, I want to see that. So I don't want her to pressure her perspective to go away.
I 100% agree. I think just the dynamics of that were already really interesting in Silver Flames, and we only got a fourth of the book.
Yes.
Centered around those dynamics. So I'm like, give me the 800-page book about it. Yes.
Obviously, we talked about it. So we get 2 new characters in this book. Well, we get a couple, but the main ones are Gwyn and Emery.
Yep.
Emery is an Illyrian in the mountains, and Gwyn is one of the priestesses that live in the library. I love the library whole thing, the whole situation with the library and all the priestesses being there. I just think that that's a really cool... plot point. There we go. That's what I was looking for. Something that was really odd to me, as I kind of mentioned this before, is in ACOTAR, last names are not used.
Yes.
And I don't know why this literally means nothing, but literally the only people that we know their last names are the Archerons and Lucien, and then we obviously meet Gwyn, and we learn that her last name is Gwyneth Bardera. That's how she introduced herself. And I'm like, why the only people's last name we know is Gwyn's, Lucien's, and the Archerons?
You're like, there has to be a reason for this. It can't just be lazy writing where SJM's like, we don't really need to know.
Yes, exactly. And then also, with Gwyn, I thought that it was common knowledge, but I realized the book never said it. But I had always assumed, and tell me if you assumed this too, that Gwyn is a light singer.
Literally don't even know what that is. So I'm going to go with a negative.
Hold on. Oh, frig. Now I'm not going to remember which part of the book it talks about light singers. They talk about it where... Because Gwyn sings. She sings, and like with the priestesses and things like that, she sings and whatnot. Someone in the book, it talks about light singers. It mentions them briefly, and now I'm not going to remember what they talk about. Assuming
a light singer is the opposite of a shadow singer?
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Anyways, I thought that was common knowledge, then I realized that it never flat out said that, so I don't know where my brain gathered that from exactly.
I mean, it would kind of make sense because obviously we see, I don't know if it's in the bonus chapter, but Asriel shadows sing when in the presence of Emery.
Yes.
Right?
Or Gwyn, but yes.
Oh.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
But what I was going with this is that it's really odd. It's really interesting because when I was reading this book, I started to see a lot more parallels between Gwyn and Asriel, because we have that parallel of, like, if she is a light singer, like, that's obviously a parallel to his shadow singing. There's a part in the book where Gwyn explains that she doesn't feel like she deserves anything. Like, she doesn't wear the stone because she's like, I don't deserve it. Like, she's mm-hmm. like, I lost all these people. And I don't remember where in one of the books, but someone says about Asriel that Asriel always feels like he doesn't deserve anything. So, like, it was described as, like, both of them kind of having that feeling. And then there's a part where Gwyn, like, when she's about to cut the ribbon, she says the line of, like, I am the rock in which the surf crashes. No, yeah, whatever it says. And then the last line of that is, like, I cannot be broken or whatever. And I told you last time that there is a line that Asriel tells Pharaoh, like, that he tells himself. He says, I am immortal. You are hard. Like, I am hard to break. That's what he, like, tells himself when he's, like, having a hard time. So there's this other parallel of something that Gwyn says, and then the Asriel says too, that are very similar. Like, I cannot be broken. I am very hard to break. And I was like, oh, there's too many parallels between these two characters.
Oh my gosh. And I have short-term memory loss. I swear I forget things. So why did I just remember that Asriel's the one that saved Gwyn?
Yes.
Too.
So he's fully aware that Gwyn, like, had been raped and, like what happened to her and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And yeah, there's a lot of parallels between the two characters, and I didn't, like, pick up on all of them until I was listening again. I was like, they can't not end up together.
Yeah, and her bars before they start the breaking, because she's the one that really is like, we are going up the breaking, we are not stopping.
Yeah.
She's like, I've been broken before, I will not be broken again.
Yes, like, exactly. And also, like, I love seeing, she gives Asriel some sass after they cut the ribbon and stuff. And then they, like, bring in the, like, obstacle course. And she's like, what do we get if we finish? And Asriel's like, well, you're assuming that you are going to finish, which you're not. And she's like, bet. And she gives Asriel so much sass. And yeah. I think it's so good.
She says, see you tomorrow, shadow singer.
Yes.
And then Nesta looks and was like, after she cuts the ribbon, and then she says that on the way out, then Nesta was like, oh boy, Az, did you see how Gwyn was with the ribbon? You're the new ribbon.
Yes, like, you have no idea what you just started. And what was really interesting was I felt like Asriel, like, watches Gwyn, but it almost felt like he was, like, he's fighting against these, like, odd pull, or, like, his feelings towards her, because it explains that, like when he says that, like, when Nesta says that, she says that she watches Asriel, like, watch her, like, walk away, like, watch Gwyn walk away, and that he, like, his eyes seem to glimmer or something like that. It was something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this man has some denial issues.
Honestly, he's in denial. I agree, because with him and Elaine, maybe it's just a vibe. I don't know if I have any facts that support this.
This is so true,
but it feels like he's trying to force things with Elaine because it makes sense.
Yes.
Because with Rhys being with Feyre and Cassian being with Nesta, it's almost like, yeah, she's great, she's lovely, I'm sure she's fun to be around, she's nice, whatever, but, like, there's not really any passion there. Yes.
And we obviously know that he has a consistency of doing this, because he did the same thing with Moore too. Like, Moore was what was in front of him, it made sense, because, you know, that was what, like, that was, like, kind of his, in all honesty, like, his options.
Yeah.
And he's like, so Moore, and you're like, no.
And I think he's always one, from what we've seen right now, which we obviously don't know that much about Asriel, mm-hmm. but he's always one to think with his head and not his heart.
Yeah, that's
true.
So I
think practically he looks at things and he says, yeah, that would make sense. Or, she's a great girl, that would make sense.
Yes.
Not like, I burn for this person, I must be with them.
Yes, exactly. So anyways, those were kind of all my thoughts about Gwyn. Sorry, that was kind of a jump around, but.
Oh, that's so okay.
Where would you like to begin with this book?
Okay. One thing that I was hoping that maybe you could explain to me more, because I know you're a lot more knowledgeable of this. But, like, obviously we have the Dread Trove, mm-hmm. right? And part of the Dread Trove is the harp, mm-hmm. right? And one thing that I noticed is Gwyn, when she's in Gwyn.
Yes.
Was I saying Gwyn? Whatever.
Whatever.
You get the gist.
Same thing.
Gwyn, when she's in the library and she's talking to Nesta, they're talking about how many worlds there are. And mm-hmm. she's like, oh, some people think there's 11, and then other people think there's 26.
Yes.
And then we learn the harp has 26 strings.
Yes.
So in my head, I'm like, oh, a string for every single world.
Yeah.
Right? Please tell me then how Nesta's able to be like, take me to Cassian. Pluck, boom, goes to Cassian. Like, is there a string for that? I thought there was a string for each world.
It's not really explained deeply because I also don't think that they real, like, she is, I think now, well, okay, sorry. This is really hard to explain without spoiling things, but I think that it's just not explained because I don't think that they even, she's fully comprehended what the harp could mean or do.
Mm-hmm.
But from what she does, because when she's like, okay, like, I need to get to Cassian, she plucks not just, or no, when they want to go to the, when she brings them out of the prison to, back to Valaris, like, to the river house, she has to pluck two strings. She plucks, like, a combo of strings. I think that the harp is going to be a way for them to go into other worlds, and each string would represent a world, but my theory is that you have to do it, certain combination of the strings in order for it to work. And if not, then if you just pull them, like, if you just pull the first one, that's like the, like, shortest, like, okay, you just pull the mm-hmm. one string that will teleport you.
Yeah. But
if you pull, like, then they wanted to go back to Valaris, so she pulled the, like, first and then the third string, and that brought her to Valaris or something like that. So I think that it might be like a combination of strings, but it's never explained. And they don't okay. dive into it because, but I think it's because they don't even realize to, like, think through it. Like, why would they want to go to another world? You know, at this point, they don't see that as, yeah. like, a thing to care about, you know?
Well, that makes me so curious because, obviously, at the end with Feyre having her baby and everything mm-hmm. like that, she pulls the 26th string.
Yes.
Which she said is time.
Yes.
And it freezes time. And just in my head, I like rules, very clear-cut rules, and I'm like, I thought this was something that was supposed to teleport us to different worlds, and now it's stopping time.
And so I think that, and again, it doesn't explain what that is, but mm-hmm. This was also, like, this is a huge argument on social media as well, because obviously this is the only Throne of Glass spoiler. I'm assuming this is what you're probably going to talk about. I do have a Throne of Glass spoiler.
I don't think it is, but continue. Okay,
so we obviously know in Throne of Glass, Aelin falls through all the worlds, and in this book, it is mentioned that during Starfall, they see a red star, and it, like, disturbed Rhysand. Like, it was, like, disturbing, this, like, red star that they saw, and it was insinuated that that is Aelin, that was Aelin falling through the worlds, and when Aelin falls through the worlds, she sees Rhysand and Feyre, and that Feyre's was...
pregnant.
Yes, it was that. It was that Starfall that they saw, and Aelin was the red star that they saw that was disturbing to them.
What?
Did you not know this?
No. That makes so much sense.
The red... Ah, my phone. The red star that they see that, like, is disturbing was insinuated that it was Aelin. We also talk about how, like, when everything aligns and, like, if Throne of Glass is happening at the same time as ACOTAR, mm-hmm. my argument is that Aelin fell through the worlds, fell through all of them, including time. So I don't think that the worlds... happened at the same time, and that is how it didn't work, was because she fell through not just worlds but time itself. And so they're
interesting. Wow, so. This is like we're playing 4D chess
sorry.
Is crazy,
but yeah, I think that the harp hasn't, like, been fully explained, but
okay,
it is a little interesting, the time situation, but yeah, anyways, okay, that was all I had about Throne of Glass, but sorry.
I have so much more. I don't even know where to start. Okay.
I know, I have so many things.
Also, like, this is just kind of a one-off thing mm-hmm. that we know all the worlds are very different, ACOTAR to Crescent City to Throne of Glass, whatever. We see this is the Throne of Glass spoiler, kind of. In Throne of Glass, you are not able to hurt your mate. Like, that's non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Right? But then in this one... Cassian obviously tries to kill Nesta, and I mean, he fights it and he ends up kind of fake stabbing himself, whatever. Yeah. But he does try to kill Nesta, and they're mates at this point.
When he's underneath the
crown. And I don't know if it's like, oh, it's because it's the crown, and maybe that's the thing, or maybe because Nesta hadn't fully acknowledged at that point that they were mates. So maybe.
I feel like their mating thing is different because. Also, like, they do a whole, like, mating ceremony, like, in order to, like, like accept your mating bond. You have to like cook your mate food. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's like something weird like that. And so I feel like maybe that's why, is because I think that their mating bonds are different.
Interesting. Which is so funny because, you know, if there potentially is crossover and things like that, how she's going to work with that if everything's so different?
Yeah, because in one, we see mates like in ACOTAR, but they have to like go through like a mating ceremony. In Throne of Glass, mating ceremonies don't really exist. They just like, it's just like a bond that snaps into place when you accept it and blah, blah, blah. And then in Crescent City, we don't actually get a ton of mates, but it's more of like a chosen thing.
And it's also cross species.
Yeah, which, and it was also, well, also technically Nesta and Cassian's would be cross species too. They are not the same species.
I should know this. Illyrian and Fae.
Fae, yes. They are not the same
crazy
thing.
Crazy. The whole mating situation in all books, I feel like, is so, like, vague right now.
No, it's so vague.
I'm like, oh, there's so much she could do.
I know. Anyways, so yeah.
Okay. My other thing, I have a couple. Where do you want me to start? On, like, the question or the theory or...
Whichever one you feel like is easier.
Okay. First things first.
Okay.
Where the heck is Mor during this whole... I was thinking about it.
She's in Valhalla.
Yeah, because she's in Volbara recruiting political allies to sign the peace treaty to unite Prithian.
Yes.
Right? Or so we're told. Yes. Right? And then we get a random one-off mention that she's having Clotho, whatever, from the library research something for her.
Oh, what was it?
But then I don't think they ever follow up on it. They're like, oh yeah, I'm doing this for Mor.
Oh yeah, because she's like, I have to go down to the library to check on Clotho. She's looking into something for me.
Yeah. And then that's it. And I'm like, okay, random. But what is she looking into? And then obviously we see in Frost and Starlight, she has the home that she's purchased for the last 300 years that's like nobody knows about. And on her way to the home, a big thing of darkness.
Yeah.
Like, stares at her, and she's like, oh, neat. I'm going to keep going. And then just never acknowledges it. In my head, when I heard shadows and darkness, I'm like, Bryaxis, right?
Oh, interesting.
Because, you know, at Akawar, they're like, oh, we let Bryaxis free. We probably should go round him up. And Rhys is like, nah, let him wander for a while.
He, like, randomly gets mentioned a couple times, and you're like, they're like, we still don't know where
but
he is.
But he's just, like, wandering around. I'm like, are we not going to go try and... I mean, he's deadly, but whatever. Let him do his thing.
Yeah.
But the whole situation with Mor is just so vague in this book that I don't even know what's happening or if we are going to get a Tower of Dawn novella type book where we get to see where Mor is during this time.
I think getting a novella type situation of what Mor is doing at this time, I think would make the most amount of sense, like a Tower of Dawn situation. I did see I didn't come up with this theory, but I did see a theory of what Mor actually saw when she said that she saw this like shadow lurking. But it's a Crescent City spoiler, so we'll talk about it later.
TBD.
But yes, I do think that it's very odd. Like, she's just, like, in Valhallan or whatever, like, and that's all we get.
No one knows. Valhallan?
Isn't it V-A-L-L-A-G-H-N or something?
Why did I think it was V-A-L-B-A-R-A? I thought it was Valbara.
No, it's Valhallan.
Anyways, the one that like starts that. With the V,
yeah,
that place.
I could be saying it wrong, too, so let's not count on it. Anyways, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, it was just... Everything's so obscure with her. And
yes,
like we see with Throne of Glass, when Kale's not there, we get a whole nother book talking about where Kale is during the time.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it comes into play.
And I think Mor needs a lot expanded on. Obviously, we have her and Eris, which Abby has a whole thing brewing on. So go.
Oh, I get to talk about it now.
Now is the time.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Hold on. Guys, I'm so excited. I've been waiting. I held myself back last episode so that we could talk about this. My Eris and Mor theory.
Yes.
First off, I need to mention that I absolutely love Eris.
I do too.
I think that he is a... I've always said that Eris is a dreamer similar to Rhysand. Like, I talked about it in the last episode where this he just wants a better world and better court and things like that. And it's obviously said in this book that Eris wants his father's throne, essentially. Like, he wants to be the High Lord of the Autumn Court, and that's kind of like what he's been trying to do. But we obviously learned that Eris and Mor were supposed to get married, and they were like basically being like sold to each other to like
betrothed, or whatever.
Thank you. Anyways, and then Moore, but Moore didn't want that, so Moore slept with Cassian
as his she should, I guess.
so that she was basically like her virginity cleanliness was taken, and so then hopefully it would mean that the situation would end. Her father finds out, basically beats the crap out of her, stabs a sign into her abdomen, and then drops her off at the Autumn Court, and they're like, here you go. Here's your filth, essentially. In Frost and Starlight, we finally get like a the glimpse of like what actually happened during that scene. And in that scene, Eris asks her, like Eris and some of his friends or what brothers like come up and they're like, well, we need to help her. And he's like, no, no one touch her. And I was like, what the frick?
Yeah.
And then he asks her, he literally asks her, he's like, Moore, do you want to stay here? And she says, no. And he's like, okay, then. And he goes like, that's what I thought. And then he's like, no one can touch her. No one touch her, whatever. And then in, sorry, this is such a long winded theory. I'm trying my best. Anyways, and then in Silver Flames, it is very much shown throughout all of the book as when Eris was introduced, was that he always asks about Moore. He always asks like where she is, and like he kind of does it in a douchey way, but like he obviously in a way of like a roundabout way of like being like, is she okay? Kind of thing. And then in Silver Flame, there's a part two where he's with Cassian and he turns to Cassian and is like, why isn't Morgan coming in and saying hello? And Cassian in his inner monologue is like, I don't know how he can tell that she's here right now, but okay. I think that Eris and Moore were betrothed to each other. Like they were, like they, it wasn't by their choice.
Mm-hmm.
But when Eris met Moore, realized that Moore was his mate.
Yes.
And
agreed.
Agreed. I think that they were mates, but I think that Eris, the thing that he hates the most is his father, because his father married his mother and because they were mates.
Mm-hmm.
And like the last thing he wants is to become anything like his father. And the last thing he wanted to do was force someone into a mating bond that obviously didn't want it. And I think that when Moore got dropped off at the Autumn Court, I think his father knew that they were also mates. And I think that Eris knew that if he would have touched Moore and brought her back, that would have been his father. His father would have been like, hey, then that's you claiming her as your mate or like your betrothed, like you would have to keep her. And he would rather let go of his mate, his like one chance of like having that bond, than being anything like his father.
Yeah.
And so that's why he doesn't touch her. Because in Silver Flames, he says, he's like, Cassian kind of snaps at him at one point and is like, you let Morgan like die. And he's like, that's not what happened. He's like, stop making a story into something you don't. And he's like, I think Morgan is finally realizing what actually happened that day. That's the line.
Yeah.
And I think I think Moore is now realizing that they were mates, but she basically just like null and voided their mating bond because she doesn't like guys.
Well, we also see in that same interaction, he's like, you don't understand what it cost me.
Yes.
And you're like, wait, what do you mean cost to you? You walked away.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you let her die. And it's like, no. I think that they were mates. And because he walked away, when he walked away, that was him. That was them rejecting the mating bond. But he still has heightened senses. He still has this like he wants to protect her still. Because he still has those like natural like feelings towards her that you have when you are mates.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is also why I think Lucien is going to, like, him and Lucien are going to bond over that, is because I think Eris is going to be like, Lucien, like, I understand what you're going through.
Your mate doesn't want you? I got
Same.
You, boy.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? And I also think, too, because we also learned that Helion and their mother, the Autumn Queen, the Autumn Lady, whatever her name is. Frick. That she actually loved Helion the entire time. She was in love with Helion. That was who she wanted to be with. And that is Lucien's father. This is also into my other theory, was that I think that Eris is a bloodhound. We learn in Crescent City that bloodhounds are people who can smell what your lineage are, your lineages. And so I think that Eris knew the entire time that Lucien was not his full brother. That's why when
he hates him.
Yeah, that's why he hates him, is because I think that he loathes that Lucien was actually made from a relationship out of love and not out of necessity like he was.
Yeah.
And but I also know that that's why he knew that if Lucien, after like his girlfriend or whatever got killed by the Autumn King and like he got brought to the Spring Court, Aerys is the one that brought him to the Spring Court. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Aerys knew that he would be safe in the Spring Court, because he knew that Baron like didn't actually have like say over him because he's not his real father, and he knew that he'd be safe in the Spring Court. Anyways,
I guess that's not a good way to say it. He probably never hated him. He was probably jealous.
Jealous. Yes. I think he was jealous of Lucien. Mm-hmm. Anyways, sorry. That was such a long-winded thing. I have so many theories about Aerys, but I just think that there's so much the story, and there's no way that Aerys and Mor weren't mates.
I agree, because it also would make sense, because we know being mates, it's love is not a requirement in the slightest. It's like a matchup of power.
Yeah.
And from what we could tell, Aerys is pretty powerful. I'm not 100% sure what his powers actually are.
Yes.
But
fire.
Yes, because he's melting the lake.
Yeah,
and yeah, so fire. And then we know more, it sounds like, is truth of some sort. Somewhat ambiguous, whatever. But they're both relatively powerful, so it makes sense that they would match up. As well as, I think Aerys knew not only that she didn't want to be with him, but that she preferred women the entire time.
Yes.
Because I think something, the line is, he says, "I would never touch you. I know exactly why you did it," or something later after this has all gone down. And then when she's actually injured at that time and he stumbles upon her, she says, "I would rather die than be with some man like you." And like, it sounded like she had put an emphasis kind of on the man, or, and she could have said someone like you, but didn't. And it's like, some man like you, and it's like recognition flashed in his eyes or something. And it's like, oh, I don't think she likes men. Yes. She doesn't want to be stuck with me. And obviously we know Lucien's girlfriend got beheaded.
Yeah.
So there's probably a major threat to her life as well.
Yes.
So caring about her so much, he's like, this is like a double whammy. I cannot be with her.
Yes. And also, side note, I had posted, if you want to see more about the Mor and Aerys theory, I explained it a lot better in quicker detail on my TikTok. But one of the biggest things that people were saying on my TikTok when I post this video, where they were like, but then that kind of sucks for Mor. Like, she's never going to get a happy ending. And I'm like, no. We've established that you don't have to be mates in order to be in love or get married. And I think that honestly, like in the ACOTAR book series as a whole, we have yet to see a relationship that isn't mates. And I think that that's gonna, like, I just think for a variety of things, like, we just need something that's not mates, because in Throne of Glass we get that, we get Aelyed and Lorcan, like, you know what I mean, like, we have a couple relationships that aren't necessarily like mates.
Yeah.
And I think that that has yet to be seen in ACOTAR, and so I think Mor and Emery would be like a good matchup of like, we may not be mates, but we love each other, and we're going to go against, you know, what the, like, forces of nature have said we can't be, and we're going to be together, you know? And I think that that's a lot better, in all honesty.
Yeah, because the only one that we've ever heard of, really, is Helion and, obviously, Lucien and Aerys' mom.
Yeah.
But that's just mentioned in passing.
Yeah, like, we haven't actually seen it happen.
And they're not together.
Yeah, exactly. And I know people are going to see this, and they're going to be like, but what about Elaine and Asriel? No.
I'm so on board with Lucien is gonna happen.
Yes.
I truly don't think you can have all three bat boys with all three girls.
No.
As well as somebody, when I was doing my theories deep dive and looking into it, everybody was saying that Sarah J. Maas used to keep a very in-depth Pinterest board.
Oh yeah.
And she would pin tons of things for specific couples, like under boards, and she had an Lucien board and pinned tons of stuff to it. And then deleted everything, and then came out a little bit later and she said, oh, I was thinking about rearranging some of the couples, but then ultimately decided what I had originally was the way to go. So everybody was like, Lucien, confirmed.
Confirmed. No, I'm so intrigued. But yeah, that's my Mor and Aerys theory. And I think that it also just makes sense, and then that would kind of help Lucien. And I don't know. I think it'd be an interesting dynamic to see. But I'm excited to see where Aerys' character is going, because I think that he is a very hated on character for no reason as well. Him and Lucien both, poor guys.
I truly think he could get his own book.
Oh, like, I think so too.
I think she's been dropping breadcrumbs about Aerys for all three books entire time, and there's so much to him that we don't understand. I do have another theory, though.
Okay, let's hear your theory.
Okay, I have a theory on where Nesta's power actually originates.
Oh, interesting. From. Okay, go.
Because this whole time we talk about Nesta's power, we know she stole something from the cauldron, but that's pretty much it. We don't know what it is, what it does exactly. Mm-hmm. So my theory is Nesta's stole her power from Deanna, which Deanna is the goddess of the moon. Because we see several times throughout Silver Flames, there's almost like a voice that talks to Nesta. It happens when she faces the Kelpie. It's whispering to her saying, run, run. Mm-hmm. And then obviously when she's saving Feyre, she's like praying and she's saying, you know, show me the way to fix all of this and I'll give you your power back.
Interesting.
And a lot of people theorize that it's the mother that she's speaking to. But I actually think it is Deanna. We see this is the Throne of Glass spoiler. In Empire of Storms, we see Aelin. She has her word key around her neck during Skull's Bay. She gets possessed by Deanna and she erupts moonfire. And moonfire is described as silver flames.
Yes.
Obviously, we know Nesta's power also manifests as silver flames, right?
Interesting.
And then, so that alone, I'm like, the power is similar. That makes sense. And then we get these one-off lines a few times that just feel very intentional, where the maid swords and daggers that Nesta makes, when Rhys unsheaths them, it specifically says the swords like glowed with moonlight.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, oh, very intentional. Huh. And then when she's having her nightmare and Cassian wakes her up, it says voices led her to a hill where she could rest in the safety of the moonlight. Specifically.
Interesting.
So it feels like she has almost this kinship with the moon.
Yeah.
And her power manifests the same.
Interesting.
And then obviously in Throne of Glass as well, we see Aelin banish the gods. And then open up like a hell portal and then close the gate. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, I'm like, either she banished them to Prithian, maybe, or, and like the hell monsters could even be like a Bryaxis, or she banished them if like the cauldron could be a world in itself, like banished them into the cauldron.
Interesting.
So then when Nesta pulled from the cauldron, she was pulling specifically from Deanna.
That's a really interesting thought, because I know that like, there were some theories, and again, this would have to touch a little bit on Crescent City, but there was some talk of like Luna and Deanna and like these like goddesses that were like represented by like Archery or the Moon were actually the same goddess, like the same people, same person. And I'm wondering too, because I always had this thought that like, because in Throne of Glass too, they talk about word and like how word is like the essence of space and whatever. Yeah. And I've thought that word or the mother, like whatever the their world's like greatest forces were, was actually just the time and space between
worlds.
And so I always just like assumed, maybe this is dumb of me, but I always just assumed that the gods like could travel through word and or the mother, like whatever it is, like I thought that they could just travel through the like essence of time and space between each of the worlds. So I always just thought that like, and I just thought that Aelin closing the gates was like closing the gates to their world, like they couldn't come back in, like they couldn't stop in her world or like do anything in their world, like it was basically closing off their world to like the other worlds and the other and the gods. So I don't know, but I do, that makes a lot of sense. But that'd also be really interesting, because at the end of the book it says that like that Nesta gets a tattoo that she makes, a she made a bargain with the cauldron itself. But what if it wasn't the cauldron, it was with Deanna? That's who she made a bargain with. That would be really interesting.
And I want to know if there's any more specifics with like her and the moon or something like that.
Dang, now I wish I could go back and reread and all of it again to pick out. That's so obviously interesting.
With Crescent City, and we'll touch on this later, there's obviously the eight-pointed star and Nesta. There's references to her and the eight-pointed star and Silver Flames and then the moon and the stars. And like, there's just a lot of stuff that feels very, it's too coincidental that I'm like, I feel like we're going somewhere.
Wow. I did not think that through. That's so interesting. I never thought about that. Like, I know you would cut on to the Silver Flames thing, but that would be really interesting if it was like Deanna thing the entire time.
Well, I didn't know the Crescent City Gods, like you said, that until recently when I was doing my research for this, that we thought there might be an overlap where there's just different names for the same god.
Yes.
So all of it's interconnected somehow.
Oh my gosh. My brain hurts just thinking about it sometimes, and I'm like, I can't imagine the headaches that Sarah J. Maas sometimes has when she's like thinking through all this stuff. I don't know how.
Yeah, she's crazy. I don't know how she does it.
Did you have any other thoughts?
There's only one other thing that I noticed is the whole thing with, we get the plot point of, is Rhys gonna become High King?
Oh yes.
And
I want to talk about this too.
Obviously, he says, I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
But Amarin suggests, with the maid swords that Nesta created with the cauldron, that he would be able to become High King because he's so powerful, because these swords are so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
However, I thought it was really interesting because when they go to the prison, Nesta and Cassian, and run into Lanthus, Nesta draws Ataraxia,
yes.
And Lanthus mistakes it for a different sword and is like, I don't know if he name drops the sword, but the sword is Narbin.
He name drops it.
Yeah, is this Narbin, which is like another made sword, and says like, oh, I thought it was lost at sea.
They say that Amarantha like destroyed, like left it, couldn't destroy it, so she like threw it into the sea is what
Yes. So in my head, I'm wondering, can anybody become High King if they have this sword, if they're powerful enough? Or is it specific that you need to have, like, the shadows and the darkness? We know another character in the SJM universe that has shadows and darkness.
Yeah. Honestly, I think, if I remember right, the reason why Amarantha threw the sword into the ocean is because they couldn't destroy it, and no one could control it, if I remember right. And that's why she throws it into the ocean, is because she's like, well, if I can't have it, no one can. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe, like, yes, if you have the sword, but it's not about, I think it's really similar to the Star Sword as well. Like, in Crescent City, it's like, it's less of, like, if you can find it, it's whether if it will let you, you know, it'll let you control it.
Well, I'm so interested to see if there's going to be a conflict of, hypothetically speaking, say somebody else finds Narbin, if they're just going to have this, like, immensely larger power and going to be a threat in that sense of the word, or even... This is so random, but, like, we know the cauldron loves Elaine.
Yes.
Obviously, the cauldron gave Elaine a gift.
Yes.
So, like, if Elaine has the sword, if she's going to be, not necessarily Narbin, but, like, the swords Nesta made, she's going to be a lot more powerful. I just thought the fact that Amarantha threw the sword in the ocean and it just was not addressed, I'm like, that's not a good enough solution.
You're
for
like, that is, it, that does not mean that this sword is gone and done for. It's like, it'll come back for sure. I wanted to touch on this though, because I wanted to mention this last time, but I wanted to wait. So obviously, like we said, it's brought up a couple times, twice I think, about Rhysand being High King.
Yes.
And he is so against the idea. He's like, no, I do not want to be High King. I will never get people to be High King. And Cassian, in his inner monologue, is like, but I can't imagine wanting to serve a High King and Queen more than Rhys and Feyre or whatever. But listen, one of the times that Rhys and Feyre go and visit the Bone Carver, this is going back a little bit, okay? One of the times that Rhys and Feyre go and visit the Bone Carver says hello by saying, Majesties, hello. And like something like that. Like his
Stop
line
it right
says
now.
Majesties. And I said, intersecting. So I did some research and I said, because High Lords don't get called Majesties.
Yeah.
They're called Lords and Ladies and things like that, but no one is called Majesties. And I looked, and sure enough, that is the only time anyone is ever called Majesty outside of the Six Queens from the Human Lands. No one is ever called Majesty, except for that one point when the Bone Carver, who has obviously been able to see things in the future, calls Rhys and Feyre Majesties.
Mm-hmm.
And then not only that, do you remember the nice little riddle I told you that the Book of Breathing like tells
them? Yes, yes.
What was interesting was that when it's describing in that last line, it's like, hello, Lady of Night.
Night.
And, but then it says, hello, Lady of Night, Princess of Decay. Hello, Trembling Fawn. Hello, whatever the other thing. I can't remember what the other thing was. So for Nesta and Elaine, it was like only one word. But for Feyre, it said, hello, Lady of Night, Princess of Decay. And I was like, so there's like a couple things like that where I've been like, it's hinting at like them being called something other than Lord and Lady and High Lord. And I'm like, what does this mean?
Wait, I wonder if there's going to be a threat that wants to rise to High King. And the only reason they're going to accept High King and High Queen is to stop the threat of somebody else doing it.
Oh, for sure. And I think, this is where I didn't like Silver Flames as much, is because I feel like we weren't really getting anywhere with like the big overarching like plot. Like, what is the villain in this like next part of ACOTAR, you know, other than Coast Jay? Yeah, Coast Jay. So obviously like it's hinting at Coast Jay like being this like Death Lord who's trapped at a lake right now, but like maybe that's what the plot's gonna be, is Coast Jay like getting free and them having to go to war because he wants to become High King, and like maybe he's gonna try and find Narbin, I don't know, or like try and wield these magical swords like he can be High King. I don't know if that's where it's going or not.
I feel like it has to be, because the only other person as of right now that I could think of is maybe the Autumn King, but the Autumn King seems like so small potatoes in comparison to a death god.
Yes, exactly. And I just think, too, that I think they're just going to, at some point, I wouldn't be surprised, and let me know what you think about this, was my thought, was that in the end of ACOTAR, Feyre and Rhysand will end up High King and Queen of Prithian.
Mm-hmm.
Nesta and Cassian will be the
generals.
High Lord and Lady of the Night Court, because Asriel will be the High Lord of the Dusk Court, which we'll get to in Crescent City.
Yes.
And then Lucian and Elaine will obviously be the High King and Queen. Or
of
high,
the Day Court.
Yes. Lord and Lady of the Day Court. And so then, yeah. Yeah, that was it. And this is also another theory, was that Gwyn is Tamlin's daughter. And Gwyn would eventually be...
What?
Yeah, that's also a theory. Sorry, I forgot to mention that part.
It was so out of pocket.
Circle back. Anyways, but that was the theory that I had. That was where everyone will kind of like end up, essentially.
So interesting. I wonder, where do you think Tamlin is going to end up in the grand scheme of things? Because I know people have hypothesized potentially a redemption arc, or even a redemption arc involving Elaine.
No.
Which no. I don't think, I think it's Asriel or Lucian is more the discussion, but.
I truly don't think that Tamlin is going to end up with anyone at the end of the day.
So sad.
I know, which is so sad. But also at the same time, I think, that's a lie. Well, wait, did I talk about the potential for Tamlin's mate was last book
or no, last episode? I don't think you did.
Okay, so there was also a theory, and again, I'd have to get into it a little bit more in Crescent City, but I do have this theory that Tamlin's mate was Rhysand's sister.
Oh, yes. I remember you saying
and
this.
And that he actually saved her and that she's not dead. And anyways, that's why he was like okay with like marrying Feyre without the mating bond.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I don't think that Tamlin should get a redemption arc because his actions were not great.
Yeah.
But I do think that I would like to see a healing arc. And in Silver Flames, Gwyn explains that the way that she was born, the way that she was made was by the Great Rite. And she doesn't know who her father is.
Oh,
and we
no.
all know what happens. And the Great Rite
is specific to the Spring Court.
For the Spring Court, when the High Lord goes and has
his way
with a chosen person. Anyways, and Gwyn says that she doesn't know who her father is, but I'm like,
red flag. It must be somebody
yes,
we know.
Yes, exactly. And so I think I could see Tamlin getting a healing arc, and it be because of Gwyn.
And he gets to reconnect with his daughter?
Yes.
Wait, okay, fine. You've convinced me.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. But I don't think that he should have, like, a redemption arc, become the hero of some sort. I just think that, but I do think that he should get a healing arc of some sort and turn the Spring Court around, perhaps.
Okay, wait. I'm also so interested. The other person I'm concerned about is Aerys. Who is he going to end up with? Because he can't end up alone, right?
I don't know.
And when in Silver Flames, which this was so out of pocket, Rhysand was like, Nesta, you're going to convince Aerys to marry you with your awesome twirling and dancing. I'm like, what?
I don't see Aerys ending up with anyone, but I do see him ending up as the High Lord of Autumn Court.
To me, why did... Obviously, it doesn't make sense anymore, but why did Nesta and Aerys, like, kind of make sense? Because they're both kind of, I don't want to say conniving, but, you know,
no, definitely.
Sassy, kind of off-putting, etc. Yes. I'm like, those two would make so much sense, and they would be major players in this political game and be whatever.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, that makes sense. So I want somebody like that for him, but we're out of characters.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, I don't think we have any more characters, so it would have to be someone new. But I also could see him not ending up with anyone, but him ending up as the High Lord of Autumn.
I guess if he has a, you know, healing journey similarly with Lucien and they get a connect, maybe that's where his story goes.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. But I just think that, yeah, and I think that maybe his relationships, quote unquote relationships, are going to be him slowly becoming a part of the inner circle, actually making friends.
Eris in the inner circle?
Yeah.
Okay. Would die for that.
Wouldn't that be so fun, though? And I just, anyways, I also just think, too, that it's been hinted at that, like, they are starting to build more friendships with, like, Tarquin and what's the Winter Court's?
Callius?
Yes, or him and his wife. Like, mm-hmm. I think that that's, like, hinted at. Like, they basically are friends with, like, all of the High Lords except for Baron. But if Baron didn't exist anymore and Eris was there, and Eris has been so, such a big part of, like, of all of this, that I'm like, what if he, you know, finally gets it? Him and Lucien both, they finally get accepted into Velaris and their friendships.
I just concocted a whole scene in my brain that probably will not come to fruition, but what if, obviously, we get a healing journey with Eris and Mor, and they become friends after Aww, everything? What
like
if
that.
Mor ends up with Emery, and because they're not mates, because we think Eris and Mor are mates, and she rejected the bond, what if they have, like, a traditional wedding and Eris is there to support them?
Aww.
What if he officiates?
So this is such a side note, but Sarah J. Maas said in an interview that Jane Austen has never written a wedding scene, and she also agrees that she will never write a wedding scene. And she did say that in the next ACOTAR book she was going to try, but if it's too cheesy, then she'll just scrap it.
Excuse me, sir. I mean, excuse me, ma'am. Did you forget about ACOTAR? You literally wrote a wedding scene.
No, she didn't.
A crashed wedding.
Oh.
Feyre is walking down the aisle.
Yeah, that doesn't count. That does not count. But think about it. We never get a wedding scene. There's not one wedding scene that we have gotten an explanation of.
Sarah J. Maas, did you hear me just now? I just wrote it for you. That is it.
That is it. That is the one we want. Anyways. Yes, I do. I do love Eris. And so I think that I would like to see him at least become the High Lord of Autumn. That would be nice.
I would love him in the inner circle and close with all of them. Things patched up with him and Lucien and with him and Mor.
Yeah. Oh. Wait, I have a question, though, for you.
Okay.
So we see that at the end of Silver Flames, obviously, Nesta had never... I feel like Nesta, at the end of the day, has never really felt accepted into the inner circle. Like,
yes,
she's slowly getting there, but, like, she sees that as, like, Feyre's family. And I think she even says, like, there's a moment when she's with, like, Emery and Gwyn, and she's like, this is my family, similar to what Feyre has found for herself. Like, I'm finding for myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Nesta is basically going to, like, create and have her own inner circle, or do you think that the inner circles will, like, kind of intermix?
I think they're gonna intermix, because I don't think she can pull Cassian from inner circle. However, I think she's gonna be on better terms with the inner circle, but have her own thing going on separately.
Because right now we kind of have, like, we have, like, the OG inner circle, including Feyre and Elaine and that, and then we also have Nesta with her Valkyries, and then we also have, what do they call themselves? The Band of Exiles. We have, like, and Durian and Lucien and things like that. So I think we have, like, a couple, like, groups of people.
Found families going on.
Yeah, found families going on. But I just was thinking about that, of if Nesta's found family is going to kind of grow, or if it's going to blend, you know?
Yeah, I think all of them are going to blend a little bit. However, I think it's important that each one of the sisters kind of has their own people. I know with Elaine, I'm interested to see where she ends up.
That is,
because if she's with Lucien, is she the Band of Exiles? If she's with Asriel, then she's the inner circle.
Also, just, like, who are her people? Like, she
she has no people.
She has the little wraiths that help in the kitchen with her.
Oh, the twins? Yeah, or the, like, twins. The sisters?
Yes.
Or...
Yeah, those people. Anyways, that was my question. Do you have any other thoughts, though?
I think that was all of it. I'm so sorry we went on, like, a big tangent at the end.
Oh, I had one more thought. This is literally just, like, a one-off thought. But obviously we see at the end of the book that Nesta fixes the anatomy for her and Feyre herself.
Yes.
But not Elaine.
R.I.P. She's not ending up with Azriel, or she's not having babies with Azriel.
She's having no babies, or else she's gonna kick the can.
That is LMAO.
Or if she does end up with
Azriel
at some point, I would love to see what backtracking bullshit Sarah J. Maas is gonna have to come up with to explain that one.
I feel like Sarah J. Maas is way smarter than that, so she must not end up with Azriel. She must have to end up with Lucien.
Because there's no way to be like, oh, I had this whole thing ordeal happen with Feyre, and now I'm gonna backtrack and have the same thing happen with Elaine. Like, no.
Yeah.
She's smarter than that. At least I think so.
Why did I also think it was kind of presumptuous at the end when she's like, I fixed my own anatomy, Cassie, and if you want to have babies with me, and I know they're mates, and like they're going to end up together. Yes. So that's a very like practical line of thinking.
Yes.
But they didn't talk about babies ever. She's like, oh, I just fixed it just in case. Wink, wink. We're having babies.
Yeah. Well, no, but he's like, you want to have children right now? And she's like, no, you idiot. And you're like, okay, well, the poor man, like, you just kind of threw that on him.
She's kind of age, because she's like, what, 26, 20, something like that.
Also immortal.
But
so let's,
I was gonna
that.
Say Cassian feels unprepared for children. He's like 500 and something.
but also have you seen the TikToks? I think it is like fully agreed that they will have a daughter. Like, that Cassian will be a girl dad for sure.
Girl dad vibes.
Girl dad vibes for sure. They will definitely have a girl.
When Nyx survives as well, it's so funny because you see all of the inner circle interact with him. And Cassian's like, oh my gosh, Nyx. And then it explains they hand Nyx to Azriel. And he's like, what do I do with this baby?
Well, this is actually kind of sad, was that Azriel freaks out holding the baby, like, with his scarred imperfect hands, like, to hold something so perfect with his imperfect hands.
I take it all back, that was really sad.
I know, he sees, Azriel's kind of like a sad boy, he kind of sees himself as kind of like a broken human being, why I was saying him and Gwyn are so similar.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's good. You sad plus sad equals still sad.
But no, I don't think Gwyn is a sad person. I think that she is a strong person, but she has her scars.
Definitely. And she definitely, like, with the bars she said where she's like, I've been broken, I won't be broken again.
Yeah, exactly.
She's definitely getting her way up.
She's a positive person, okay?
Yeah.
But yeah, that line is definitely a killer. But I will say, I love Nyx. People don't like that there's a baby involved, but we all know me, and I love when babies and kids are involved in books, and I'm so excited to see more of Nyx.
I hope we actually get some more in the next ACOTAR books, whether it's even on just the side and we get to kind of see what's going on, or give me a novella. I don't care.
As long as I get the scene of him flying for the first time with the Bat Boys, I don't care. But have you seen those, like, TikToks of, like, them flying for the first time with Nyx, and it's like to a sound, and y'all have to look it up later, but it's so cute and I just want it so bad.
Oh my goodness. Anyways, sorry. The amount of tangents.
That was my last thought though, I swear on my life.
Okay, same. I'm all done.
Wow, that was a lot. I like how I thought this episode was going to be one of our shorter ones, and I don't think it was.
Well, it also was like all the theories combined of ACOTAR, because we couldn't speak to them until after Silver Flames.
Yeah, that's true. So next week, we will be starting in Crescent City. We are going to be discussing the first two books of Crescent City. I'm going to tell you now, buckle up, because I know that both of us have a lot of theories that we have been holding on to.
Oh my gosh.
For this, so be ready. We will be getting there. And then the week after will be Flame and Shadow / Theories, wrapping up our 6 weeks of SJM. So thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure you guys leave comments and also rate our podcast so that we get seen more, because we want people to see our podcast. We want to be good at this. So,
yes, please.
Make sure you follow us on all of our social medias. It's at LA Reads Podcast for all of it. And anything else?
No, I think that's everything.
All right, and we will see you all next week.
Bye!
Wow.
That was